Hi, I'm Heather Brooker. Welcome to episode 76 of Motherhood in Hollywood, a show where we get real about parenting in the land of make-believe. My guest today is the Executive Vice President for Children's Programming at the Jim Henson Company, Hallie Stanford. She has some incredible insights into the Jim Henson Company, the television programs they create, and just the magic that's happening there on the Jim Henson lot in Hollywood. So I can't wait to share that interview with you all. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsor. Motherhood in Hollywood is sponsored by Olin Organic. If you're looking for fashionable yet natural and organic clothes to put on your child, then you need to check out olinorganic.com. Olin Organic only uses 100% certified organic cotton, which is much better for your baby and the environment. All of the fabrics are free of things like bleach, silicone, formaldehyde, plastic inks, chemical flame retardants. All of those are common chemicals found in traditional baby clothes. And you guys, the best part about these clothes is that they're very modern. They're very clean looking. You know, we have several pieces here in our house, and Channing loves them. I love them because they're soft to the touch. They're beautiful designs, and also they're organic. What a nice relief as a parent to know that you're putting something safe on your baby. So go right now to olinorganic.com and take a look around. See if you find something you like there. And if you do, when you head to the checkout, enter the code MIH10, that's MIH10, and you'll get 10% off your order just from Motherhood in Hollywood and Olin Organic. Happy shopping, everybody.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hi, you guys. Welcome to episode 76, Motherhood in Hollywood. I am really excited to share this interview with you, and don't kill me. I know I say that every time. But I'm really looking forward to this because I had the opportunity to kind of be out and about on the go with the podcast. And I went to the Jim Henson Company studios right here in Hollywood. And I sat down with Hallie Stanford. She is the Executive Vice President for Children's Programming. She's responsible for shows like Word Party, the brand new show Splash and Bubbles, their other new show Dot, but also classics you might know like Sid the Science Kid, Dinosaur Train, Doozers, if you guys are watching that. There's so many shows. There's so much information here that she talks about from her perspective in terms of developing a TV show, how she finds these programs and comes up with these ideas for children's programs, and honestly, just what it means to be working for the Jim Henson Company. There's such a legacy there in the entertainment business. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this with you guys. I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. Really quickly, I just want to say, hi, I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening to my show. It seems like lately a lot of more people are finding us, and I think that's because we have just transferred over to Blog Talk Radio. If you're finding me on Blog Talk Radio, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome. If you would please take a minute, no matter where you're listening from, take a minute and give me a review on iTunes and make sure you're subscribing to the show. It makes such a big difference in terms of the rankings on iTunes and how people can find us. Just a quick comment and review on iTunes with your podcast app, if you want to do it that way, that's totally fine. Would really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. So what's been happening this week? Let's see. Well, I actually got to do some acting. Hey, I got cast in a new show for Netflix called Atypical, and it stars Jennifer Jason Leigh and Keir Gilchrist. I was really excited about it because as an actor, you sort of feel like you're kind of just, you go on auditions and you're just constantly going on job interviews. That's what it feels like. Like, imagine if you were just constantly looking for work, and every week, two or three times a week, sometimes more or less, you're going on job interviews. And that's basically what acting is. And you're hoping that you occasionally get to be the one that gets hired to do the job. And this last week was that week for me. So yay! I got to go on set, and the director was super nice, and the executive producer was, her name was Roby Rashid, was, she's created the show. I'd love to have her on the podcast, actually. I should have asked her. That would have been smart. But yeah, so just a wonderful experience, and really capped off my week. And it kind of, as I know I've said before on the show, it really validates me, because it makes it feel like, oh yeah, I am still an actor. People do want to see me perform. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with you guys as well. A lot of fun things posting on my website, motherhoodinhollywood.com. I posted some fun holiday recipes up there for my friend Mary Moran, who is a chef for Traditional Home magazine. And also a lot of fun things happening over on my Instagram. If you are not following me on Instagram, do it, because that is where I post most of the day-to-day stuff that's happening in our lives, the cool places we get to go, the events we go to. Like, we also last week went to an event with Fox Home Entertainment. They've just released a bundle of all those Christmas classics we love, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, those sort of things. So we got to go to an event celebrating that. So follow me on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood, and you can kind of, I don't know, I guess watch me brag about where I go. It's so douchey to say that. But I mean, essentially, that's what we're all doing on social media, is we're just sort of bragging about, here's where I went. Here's the amazing thing I'm wearing. That's really all it's all about. But I have fun with it. I think as long as you know that, and you know, some people really buy into their fame on Instagram or social media. But not me, guys. Don't worry. I know I'm not famous. All right. So really quickly, I want to give a couple of mom mentions and shout outs to a few new followers over on Twitter. Twitter is where I put probably the most inappropriate comments. If you'd like to follow me over there, it's where I get the most sassy. Olga Villaire, thank you so much for following me. Bert Anderson at First Time Mom MN, thank you so much for following me on Twitter. Bionic Buzz, hey, awesome. They do a lot of great content on the YouTube, I believe, Joe and check them out. Also, Love Fitness, but it's at Fitness Love on Twitter. And who else did I want to say? Oh, Michelle Lynn. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to follow me on Motherhood in Hollywood. They're the podcast where you get to hear me ramble about myself for a really long time. You can follow me also on Twitter at MIH Podcast, and make sure you find me on Facebook too at Motherhood in Hollywood. Okay, that does it for the mommy monologue. I want to now get to my interview with the Executive Vice President of Children's Entertainment for the Jim Henson Company, Hallie Stanford. I have to say, I have never been on a lot that feels so like magical.
It is. It's a magical. And we call the campus.
Yeah, I've been to Disney, obviously. Mm-hmm. I've been to Paramount, Melrose, and they all have the movie magic. But there's something really special about this little lot you have here,
isn't it?
What do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
I think the magic has to do with a combination of things. First of all, the fact that it's been around since the early 1900s, so there's this like history to it, and then it has like Charlie Chaplin's spirit, you know, just sort of like the beginning of filmmaking and experimenting, and that all of his work was so heartfelt mm-hmm. and groundbreaking.
Yeah.
So you have that. And then you have this television history here. Then CBS came to take it over, and so the lighting grid was put up in the studio. They filmed shows like Perry Mason here.
Wow.
And the old Superman, which I watched as a kid. And then you have this rock and roll history. So you have the A&M recording studios that are now Henson recording studios, but like mind-blowing albums and rock and roll was done here, from Joni Mitchell to Tom Petty to Metallica, U2, We Are the World. I could keep going. The people I've seen here, Justin Timberlake, you know. So then you have this like rock and roll history. You have all these different like creative histories all on this little lot, and I feel like that vibe just kind of settles on it. And so it's this campus where you see, like, you could be literally, this has happened to me. I'm sitting at lunch and suddenly, and I'm talking to an artist about a show we're doing, maybe Sid the Science Kid or a puppeteer, mm-hmm. and then suddenly Paul McCartney comes out You're like, what's happening?
You're like what world am I living
where
in?
Where am I? And it just all blends together. So there you go.
Well, I'll tell you, you can definitely feel it. And I want to tell everybody really quickly that we are actually on the lot right now. I am in Hallie's office, and it is, you have the view of, is this the Charlie Chaplin studio where he used to film?
Yes, this is the Charlie, well, the entire studio is where Charlie Chaplin used to film.
Oh, so it was all over, not just
this
building.
What you're seeing is the barn. The barn, which is where they used to build the sets, mm-hmm. where I don't even know if they house livestock there. I mean, maybe. I don't know. But apparently, I'd have to fact check this, it is the oldest operating building in Hollywood, the barn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because people are still working in it.
Yeah.
That's where our animators are for Splash and Bubbles. So there you go. It's still being used.
There is something that's really special about the history of Hollywood, and I think it's really nice when studios can preserve some of that, because it's our legacy, our history of our culture and our world. And that's also why I think it's really special. Plus, hello, celebrity sightings.
Who doesn't want? Celebrity sightings. But then I also get excited about celebrity sightings like John Tartaglia from Splash, you know. So
right.
Once, you know, and when Miss Piggy came a few years ago, I was like, my God, it's Miss Piggy's outside. Everybody hurry, take pictures. So, yeah, I think Henson's put their stamp on it, too. So
totally.
There's a real preservation of this lot. Mm. Also, by the way, the landscape architecture is from like the 30s.
There's so much green.
I mean, I'm not kidding. There's a famous woman. Again, let's fact check it, everybody. Let's all go look it up. Who many of the plants that she brought in here, they're still here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So even the landscape architect has a little history here. But yes, we put our stamp on the Henson mm-hmm. Studio, so you can see it everywhere. But also with Kermit the Frog dressed as Charlie Chaplin on top of the studio.
Yeah.
But also we've created this motion capture stage. Mm-hmm. So it's now this large animation studio as well, which is something we brought to it. So that's where right now we're filming Word Party, where we did Sid the Science Kid. So there you go.
It's incredible.
We brought something new to it.
Yanina took me on a tour and I was blown away. Like it was, I've never seen motion capture done up close like that. And it was really neat to see them doing that. Like we watched Sid the Science Kid, my daughter and I. Yeah. Actually, we watch all of your shows.
Yay!
Because
we love
I have a 3.5-year-old. So like we love all of the Henson shows that are coming out. So it was just really neat to see that. Can you tell me, let's backtrack a little bit before
sure.
we get too far into all the technological things. I want to talk to you about how did you get involved in children's programming and with the Henson Company?
Well, okay, I'll answer that question in twofold.
Okay.
I have always been interested since I was a little girl in storytelling for children. So even when I was a kid, I was telling stories to younger kids or babysitting younger kids. So it's something that was always in me. Mm-hmm. And I always loved television and film. See, my mom now is so happy that all that time I spent in front of the television
is finally paid off.
Yeah, she's thrilled. I watched so much television.
That's awesome.
And I loved it. Little House on the Prairie, you name it. I watched everything. When I went to, and I was also very involved with theater, so I also felt like I could have gone into children's theater. So when I went to Wesleyan University, I studied film and theater, both had incredible programs, and it became clearer and clearer that I wanted to work in children's television and film. But at the time, I was very lucky too, because my boyfriend at the time, his godmother was Jerry Laybourne, who was working at Nickelodeon. And she's a big deal at Nickelodeon. She was the president. She's the one who sort of was the creator of Nickelodeon and what it became. And so I was very fortunate to meet her in New York City, and I didn't know who she was. So she said, what do you want to do when you get out of school? And I said, well, I'd really like to work in children's television. And she's like, oh, I work in children's television.
Oh my
I'm like,
gosh.
Oh, what do you do? You know. So what was wonderful about her at that time in my life is that she gave me a lot of advice about things to look at, what to do. And I learned a lot about development. She actually sent me 3 pilots. She said, will you look at these 3 pilots for me and just tell me what you think? And
oh,
it was
wow.
Rugrats, Doug, and Ren and Stimpy.
What?
And my mind was like blown. I'm like, what is happening?
Did you read this? What was your initial thought when you read those shows? Those are such.
No, she sent me VHS tapes.
Oh, oh.
I thought they were incredible.
Oh, wow.
Although my favorite was Doug.
Really?
Yeah. My favorite. I remember at the time thinking, wow, it was just so, all 3 of them were so different.
Right. Very different.
But anyway, so she opened up my mind to the possibilities of, oh, there's development and, oh, it's not just production. So I just sort of like had my mind expanded of the possibilities. Mm-hmm. But backing up, I always loved Jim Henson. I love the Muppets. My nickname in high school was Gonzo. Like, I am a Jim Henson nut. So when I moved out to Los Angeles, in my head, I thought, well, there's clearly only two places I could work. It's either with Jim Henson or Steven Spielberg. Like, this
right.
is where
Those
I have
are the
to
options.
Go work. Yes. These are the options.
Just go right for the top.
But I knew I just had to get a job, right? I knew I had to work. So I was very lucky that I started working for Nelvana Animation for a producer named Savage Steve Holland. Mm. And he produced a show called Eek the Cat for Fox Kids Network. And that was the beginning of me starting to work on children's television. I was a production and recording coordinator, and I actually did cartoon voices, too, for the show.
Was it specifically animation you were interested in, or
nope,
did you want to do live
it.
Action?
So all of it.
Yeah, okay.
All of it. But here was the lucky little bit. There was the lucky little universal connection, is that Savage was directing a pilot for the Jim Henson Company at the time called City Kids. And I said to him, please, 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 will you introduce me to the folks at Henson? And he said, yes, of course. So he brought me to one meeting, and I'll never forget it. I met Alex Rockwell, who later became my boss, and Kirk Thatcher, who's an incredible director and writer and designer. He's just this, you know, jack of many trades. I remember he had no shoes on. He was barefoot. And I was like, this place is so groovy. I love it here.
That's funny.
So I wrote Alex a note after that meeting that said, if there's ever a job that opened up, let me know. Yeah. And about, I'd say 6 months later, a job opening did open up. And so I went and interviewed for it, and I got it. So
and
that was for a creative assistant.
Since?
Yes.
Oh,
I have been here for, I left for 3 years to executive produce some shows for the company and to do freelance work on my own. In the middle of all of this, basically, I've been here 23 years working for the company.
Oh, so obviously you enjoy it.
I like it here a lot. it's okay. No, I'm kidding. I love it here.
That's so great. And then how did you go from creative assistant? Like, I'm sure that there was a lot of...
I kill people.
You kill people?
No,
you
I didn't
just,
kill people.
Just get them out of the way. That's
no,
the best
no,
way
no,
to
no.
do it. No, it's such a... I love hearing that because it seems to me like nowadays people go to a job and they're there for maybe 3 to 5 years and then they move
That's
on.
That's right. They
do. Something
else. They are thinking
nobody
that the next
longevity.
Best thing.
Yeah. Nobody has longevity, especially in Hollywood. Like nobody goes and stays anywhere for a really long time. This is obviously something you are passionate about. What made you decide to, or I mean, I guess you've sort of always known that you wanted to develop then after your encounter with, tell me her name again. The Nickelodeon lady.
Oh, Jeri Laybourne.
Jeri Laybourne. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is a name I should know. But after you talked with her, was development something then you were like, this is kind of the direction I'd like to go in?
I think I definitely knew that I wanted to create and produce television. And then it'll help me answer the question about why Henson, too, for this long. I didn't realize that there was this whole area where, like, you could work in and work with creators and work on your own content. And then that goes to production. I don't know why I thought that. Why did I think that magically things just started going to production?
Well, honestly, I had that misconception too. Like when you're a kid and you're watching TV, or even honestly as like a, I don't want to say lay person, but kind of when you're just a fan of television, you don't realize how many hands have been involved in
so
a
many.
Half hour show or an hour long show, from producers to writers to gaffers to, you know, all the creative.
It just keeps going.
Yeah, it just
so
keeps
deep.
Going. Yeah, no idea. And so the world sort of opens up and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, my world opened up.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And I think what I realized in college was, oh, it's called a producer. That's idea from beginning to end.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of emphasis in the television and film programs. Although my program that was run by Janine Basinger, who was fantastic, was very film theory.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, I could break them down into two categories of people in those majors, writer and director. There's no producers. So I think that kind of opened up my mind. Oh, all right, there's this thing called producers. And so we are a production company. So we are the producers of content.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other reasons that I love working here, and why have I stayed so long too, is this is a very nurturing company. They want to see you grow as a creative. But there's also like a two-track process here at Henson, which I think is very unique in our industry, which is executive track, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going from director to vice president to executive vice president. And then there's a producer track, which is going from production executive to co-producer to co-executive producer to executive producer. So you're doing these sort of two tracks at the same time, because we are so nurturing of our content that from the beginning of it to the end, you're always with it, the company, which sometimes you in other companies, it's handed off to different departments mm-hmm. or handed off to different companies. And we don't do that. So that's very unique in our industry. And that's one of the reasons I think it's so exciting for me and I stay so long mm-hmm. is because I get to stay with it from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And then we do so many different things.
You do. Now, how do you come up with the ideas for your shows? Because you have so much content. And I know when most people think of Henson Company, they think of obviously Sesame Street and the Muppets and that sort of thing, which I know are no longer with the Henson Company. They've been purchased by Disney. So then that sort of leaves you guys going, we got to come up with other ideas, you know, like we've got to, what shows can we come up with? Is that something that you do?
Yes.
That's your idea.
That's me.
Do you then meet with people, like creative types who pitch you ideas and you give the thumbs up, thumbs down?
That's correct. Here, I'll tell you a couple of, there's many, many ways that we approach coming up with ideas for, and I'll just give you a smattering if that helps. But I do want to tell you that actually when I came back to the company in around 2003, and that is right after they had sold the Muppets to Disney, and then Sesame Workshop had taken back, you know, we still build the puppets for Sesame Street, but Sesame Workshop. So when I came back, when Lisa Henson had me come back, when the Henson kids bought back the company, there was nothing. Like, we got to start from scratch. Can you imagine how exciting that is?
Yeah.
I think some people would look at that as, oh my, you know.
And a little intimidating.
Intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's get busy. So Lisa and I actually came up with the idea of Sid the Science Kid.
We both, at the time,
our kids now are in college, but at the time, our kids were preschoolers. And we just made each other laugh with stories about our preschoolers. And my son was a little kid who walked around with a big microphone, like Sid. And he would, like, narrate everything he did. And he was very scientific.
I love it.
We thought, gosh, that would be really funny with the digital puppetry to figure out how to do kind of more live improv-y comedy with kids. And then it ultimately evolved into Sid the Science Kid because PBS came back to us and said, hey, do you have a science show? And we were like, no, but I think we have the makings of one.
Right.
And that was Sid the Science Kid.
I know. I love that it has a science bent to it, because so many times I watch my three-year-old go, why does this happen? How does this work?
Right.
And that's one thing that Sid is really great at, is through his eyes, you can see him deconstruct and figure things out and do some problem solving.
Yeah. The power of the question.
Yes.
Getting them to keep asking questions and answering on their own.
So let's talk about a couple of the other shows. I know we love Sid.
And okay.
Did you have one more thing you
wanted to say? No, I was going to tell you other ways that we find ideas here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what? But you already kind of nailed it, that we take pitches. I always say that you know, in the Rainbow Connection, when they say the lovers, the dreamers, and you?
Yeah.
I always think we take pitches from the dreamers and the lovers that, like, we always take on dream projects of others. So Dinosaur Train, which we could follow into talking about, was a dream project of Cray Bartlett's. Like, we know when it's a dream project. We can feel it. And so those are the kinds of shows we develop from outside pitches. We also look at books. So Dot was a book that we found. Mm-hmm. And P.S., I didn't even look at who wrote it when I first read Dot. I didn't know it was Randy Zuckerberg. I just was like, who is this adorable periwinkled curly-haired girl? I love her.
Yeah.
And then read it and thought, wow, there's like a really modern digital citizenship curriculum here. And then closing the cover and seeing it was Randy was like, oh my God, look who wrote it too.
Right, right.
So we can get our ideas from books. And we're always keeping our ears open for what moms and dads are looking for their kids. Like, and teachers, what is there a need for?
Yeah.
What are they looking for? So Word Party was a show that was in development, mainly with the wonderful digital puppetry system. How do you create a group of lovable animal babies? That was Alex Rockwell who created it. And create a sort of interactive experience with the audience and the babies.
Mm-hmm.
But then this research came out about the vocabulary gap that exists. And when we read the research of how the real judge of how a kid's success is going to happen in school, once it's how many words they have when they enter kindergarten. And that blew our minds.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh my goodness, this would be the perfect way to enhance the show, which at the time was called Zoo Babies. And so now it's Word Party, and it made it such a stronger show. And then we sold it.
Yeah.
So sometimes the idea is there, but it needs an extra kick.
Yeah.
So it's just a nurturing of these ideas to get to the right. But they always start from like a dream project place or a place of passion or love. That is the truth.
Now, how involved are you in like the day-to-day writing of these shows? Is that something you just sort of oversee at this point? Or are you sitting down at your computer going, all right, what do I do for the next episode?
We hire writers. Mm-hmm. We think the best writers. And we give notes. So okay. we will sit down with them in the beginning. So we just did this on Doozers. Mm-hmm. We sit down and we think about, well, what's this new season going to be like? Right. Let's come up with some big ideas. So on Dinosaur Train, which, you know, second season, the big idea was nature trackers. Mm-hmm. And so once you sit down with these big ideas with the writers, then they go off.
Oh,
and
nice.
They'll come back and pitch premises and they'll write outlines and we'll give notes on them. So we're more of editors in our job than anything.
Do you feel like you have to do any sort of educational based curriculum in terms of, like, I don't know, is it an FCC requirement that you have to have certain amounts of problem solving or math skills or anything like that in your children's programming? Is there any requirement like that?
No, there is not. Having said that, every network that's doing preschool programming mm-hmm. is, they have their own curriculums that they want to achieve in their brands.
Right, right.
But they're, you know, like with PBS, there's a hardcore curriculum that you have to deliver. And in fact, just to be honest, for Henson Company, it's always big. So sometimes I hear companies say, Big E, Little E, Big E Entertainment, Little E Education. Like they're like, we'll tuck it in there like broccolis and chocolate chip cookie.
Oh.
And like, we don't feel that way at Henson. We're like, Big E, Big E.
Yeah.
Like big entertainment, big education, and both inform the other.
Yeah.
So on Splash and Bubbles, it's a big marine biology, ocean conservancy curriculum, but the curriculum actually informed who the characters became. Mm-hmm. So we were like, well, it would be fun if Bubbles was a feisty, get her fins dirty kind of fish. What kind of fish like that are out there? And then we discover, oh, a mandarin dragonette, this like gorgeous fish that's the most aggressive fish in the ocean that secretes a mucus bubble on top of itself. And we're like, that's so cool.
That's perfect.
So we make sure at Henson, like we're our own FCC, right? Like we're all about delivering that education. I do believe in older kids programming. Let me just back mm-hmm. up. Definitely the networks have a responsibility. Their broadcast standards and practices will make sure things aren't happening that kids can model.
Sure.
Like, I don't know, stabbing themselves in the eye. I don't know what those requirements
right,
are because
we
rarely get those notes, but right. They definitely do have like things they can't put in content for children.
So what is like getting you fired up right now? I know that you have a lot of shows going on, a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah.
Tell me what's on the horizon for you.
What's on the horizon for me? Yanina, what am I allowed to say is on the horizon for me?
There you go.
Hmm.
You talk about Splash and Bubbles. You talked about Splash and Bubbles and you could. There you go.
Everything up to Julie. All right. Well, listen, this has been a great year for us. So launching Word Party on Netflix, launching Splash and Bubbles on PBS, launching Dot on CBC and Sprout. It's just been like a dream year. So we're super fired up that kids are getting and parents are going to get to watch these shows now. Mm-hmm. We've been working on them for years. And like I mentioned, Word Party, that was a 10-year process to get it on
Whoa.
The air. So for us, it's so exciting that it's on. So I'm fired up about that. I'm a little extra fired up about Dot.
Yeah.
Because as a mom and as a woman, I just love this role model girl out there that her story is very modern. She's a kind of can-do girl. She has big ideas that she brings to fruition. And I love it also because I feel like, listen, I love princess shows. Like, I am a princess girl.
Right. My daughter does too. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just like that this is a different kind of show for girls. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's saying, hey, there's just different ways that girls play. And there's a real kind of maker aspect to Dot too, a do-it-yourself. So I'm kind of excited for girls to like check out Dot. Really excited.
It's nice that we're starting to see, or at least, you know, what I've perceived is that there's more of a trend towards aiming shows at little girls or having little girls as the lead in a
yes.
show, because it's been such a little boy driven market for so long.
Absolutely.
Like when I was growing up, I can't think of, I mean, we had the little girl Smurf.
Yeah, we had Smurfette. There's
Smurfette,
like one.
Yeah.
What was wrong with that?
I mean, yeah, I know. We had
Smurfette.
Smurfette and like a bunch of dudes. Like there was never any like girl. I mean,
and those heels. She was in those heels.
And she, I mean, good for her though, really. I can't do it. So I just think it's great that, you know, there's this strong movement. And I think a big part of that is because there are so many women in positions That's of right. development and creating these types of programming, and also moms. Like, you're a mom. So, you know, it's okay. We can't hear it. So you're a mom and you know what your kids liked and what you've taught to other moms and what they would enjoy, you know, for their kids too. So I think that's an essential part too of what we're seeing now. Are you seeing those kind of trends as well?
I definitely, from moms out there, see that they want this for their girls, mm-hmm. like hands down. I am seeing more and more at the networks that they're embracing it, and I feel like they need to embrace it even more.
Yeah.
Just to be honest, you know, two girls shows is not enough, in my opinion.
And when you say networks, when you, where does Henson, you said you guys are on Sprout, you're on PBS, you're on Netflix. So for you guys, it's kind of wide open. It's not like there's the Henson network, so you could kind of go anywhere, right?
We can. Yeah, we those networks you just mentioned, as well as Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. Disney Channel, YouTube, Amazon. We have a couple of things in development with Amazon That's Kids great. Right now, and then all over the world. So the first one to pick up Dot was the CBC in Canada. We have done productions with the BBC, ABC in Australia. We're an international company. We'll launch a show wherever the best home is for it.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that that speaks to the need right now for content? Because there's so many streaming services, so much online, so many online companies that are like, we need shows.
Yes, it does. It's super exciting. We love it here. We always love new gatekeepers. I call them the gatekeepers. We always love new gatekeepers. But this year, with the rise of Netflix and the brilliant leadership at Amazon, they are also upping the game. It's not just that they are allowing more shows to be aired. They are also taking risks. They are putting money into their productions, and they are excellent executives. So it ups the game for all the networks. So I think parents in the next 2 years are going to start to see some really, really cool, innovative and beautiful looking shows, especially for the younger age group. Mm-hmm. You know, in preschool, I love producers in preschool. We work so hard. We try so hard. We want it to be so good. But, you know, our budgets are limited.
Yeah.
In older kids, you get more money. I'm sure you all know this. And then when prime time, you get more, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. And so the fact that you're having these networks pay more care to the preschool mm-hmm. audience,
which
so
is
wonderful.
So funny, because our kids are so, like, we should, it's the same thing sort of with education. Like, we should be putting more money towards the younger kids so they get better shows to watch, better opportunities, better education, like that sort of thing. It's just sort of kind of messed up that there's not more money being funneled to that.
I mean, at Henson, we always make sure that those shows, I mean, it's the tradition of Jim Henson, right, with Sesame mm-hmm. Street, are top quality, like A++ players. But it's great now that lots of the networks are starting to turn their brains around and go, yes, just what you said. This is top priority.
It should be.
So it's a good flow into what I can say about Julie's Green Room with Netflix, which is coming out next year. Working with Julie Andrews on a performing arts show for preschoolers with puppets was a dream come true for our company.
Is it live? So live action?
It's live action.
Oh, that was what I was going to ask you that next. Do you guys have any live action things in the works, or are you mostly sticking with animation and
both live action? And I think that audiences expect from us live action with our puppet with workshop puppets, and the creature workshop. But Julie's Green Room is coming out, and I'm a performing arts freak. Like, it's like I grew up in Southern California, San Diego, mm-hmm. and I went every summer to Idaho Wild Arts, mm-hmm. which way back when was called ISAMATA, Idaho Wild School of Music and the Arts. So I grew up with this like amazing summer camp of performing arts, of music and theater and dance and all of that. And I know how important the performing arts are for children. I know that it creates a level of confidence and expression that no other subject can bring out in a child. So we really saw a need for it.
Yeah.
They're like in the schools. I mean, there's just a need for it. So, and then Broadway's back, right? So, we didn't really actually plan it with the Hamilton craze, but it kind of happened all at once. So for us, we're like, yay, everyone's going to be so excited, because in the show, the kids, with the help of Julie, put on a musical. They put on an original musical.
I love that.
So the kids are puppets. Uh-huh. There's also a duck. He's part of the group. And then Julie Andrews and a lot of guest stars, and it's very, so each episode is about a different performing art. So I am so excited for this one to come out for everybody.
I'm excited too. I love Julie Andrews.
Who doesn't love Julie Andrews?
I know. She's I know, like classic. Like when you think of like classic, you know, actress and singer and like the triple threat, like it's totally Julie Andrews.
And then the roles, the iconic roles that she's played are this magical nurturer of children, like transforming their lives. So this feels very natural for her to be in this role too. Yeah. We're not putting her in like a role that's like, oh, well, that
this is weird.
Yeah, that's interesting.
This also feels like a natural fit for the Jim Henson Company,
it does.
Too. Yeah.
It's got a little bit of a Muppet Show nod to it because we're in a theater. They're putting on a show.
Oh, that's great.
There's live guest stars, lots of comedy, puppet comedy. So I think that families are going to be really into it too, not just the little guys.
Oh, I think it's great. Well, that's going to do really well. I look forward to seeing that. I have to say really quickly that Fraggle Rock is my jam. I love Fraggle Rock. Is any Fraggle Rock coming back? Are they going to do
any?
Let
me tell you about Fraggle Rock right now. Wait, can I tell Yanina? Can I tell her about Fraggle Rock right now? Oh, thank God.
She said everything is on the table.
Yanina's sitting on the couch. Yeah. So Fraggle Rock is going to be re-aired on HBO.
Yay!
It's been remastered. It's going to be gorgeous looking.
I'm so excited.
And so I'm just so excited about it because I feel like, I work here. I see Fraggle Rock all the time.
I'm sure.
But I know it's timeless. Yeah. Like, so I feel like there's no reason you can't introduce Fraggle Rock to all these new generations of kids. It'll feel fresh and new to them. So I'm super excited, especially because of the environmental messages behind it.
Oh, totally.
It's timely. It's perfect. And it's going to look beautiful. So that's happening. So fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. If everybody's loving it, who knows?
Who knows what can happen?
There's definitely feature film development in the works.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, we'll see what happens. But I will say that if people want to see a spinoff of Fraggle Rock on Hulu, we have our show Doozers.
Mm-hmm.
Which we love. We're so proud of.
They're so cute.
A whole design engineering curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a little boy walk up to me. My son Theo is in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So his little friend Charlie walked up to me last week and he said, "Did you make Doozers?" And I said, "Yes." Yeah. And his dad was standing behind him, like kind of winking. And he said, "Well, there it is." Like he was in awe. So I was there it is. So clearly Charlie loves it. And I was excited he found it on Hulu. But so there's our spinoff of it, which is pretty special. So, but we'll see. I'm very hopeful of the show relaunching.
Well, you know, it's a good show. Like I still reference, it's a great show when you're still decades later, still referencing it. My husband and I are terrible at folding laundry. So sometimes we reference our laundry pile as the trash heap. Eventually it's going to start talking to us and be like, "Fold me," because it's literally piling up to our ceiling. It's terrible. We will fold our laundry eventually. Well, I too am really excited for all the things that are happening here at the Jim Henson Company. I think you guys are doing such a great job of connecting with moms and parents and kids.
That's our goal.
Important.
We love all the feedback. Yanina, who's sitting here, knows that I get the most excited when we get our Common Sense Media reviews in and we start getting feedback from parents on our Henson Family Hub. It just like for us, that's everything.
Yeah.
So keep informing us what everybody wants.
Yeah. Well, I will let you know. No, I'm just kidding.
You're like, more Fraggle Rock.
More Fraggle Rock immediately. No, I love it all. Thank you so much. I know you're a super busy lady.
No, this is so exciting. What are you kidding?
This is wonderful.
I was really excited.
All right, you guys. So I'm going to put information about all of the shows we talked about today up on motherhoodinhollywood.com and as well as where you can follow all of their social media outlets because you want to make sure you do that. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.